Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Det er blevet sommer. Politikerne er taget på sommerferie, og det er mange af Altingets journalister også. Derfor sender vi to gange om ugen i hele juli og en del af august en sommerserie fyldt med interviews med nogle af de mennesker, som har markeret sig i den politiske debat i år. Samtalerne de er optaget live i vores podcaststudie på Bornholm i forbindelse med årets folkemøde, og de er lavet af en række forskellige journalister her på Altinget, inklusiv mig selv, Caroline Tranberg. Jeg håber, du vil tage godt imod sommerserien, indtil din almindelige Azure er tilbage i midten af august. Rigtig god sommer til dig, og rigtig god fornøjelse med Altingets samtaler fra folkemødet.
Welcome to Conversations from Folkemødet. This is a conversation that is going to be in English because my guest in the studio right now is the German ambassador to Denmark, Pascal Hector. Welcome.
Hello.
My name is Jakob Nielsen. Pascal Hector, you have been ambassador here in Denmark for almost a year now. And I thought that today I would like to talk a little bit with you about what is happening in Germany. Of course, that's a big question for a big country, but I think two developments stand out. One is the new government that is in place, the coalition government with the Social Democrats, the Liberal Party, and the Green Party. And I would like to talk a little bit about what that new government means, not least for energy and climate policy, because there's been some changes in that respect. And then also I would like to talk to you about the situation in Ukraine, of course, because that has also really been a very big moment of change in German foreign policy. I would like you to help us understand that a little bit better. So with that introduction, welcome, thank you for being with us. And let's start with the government. What has happened since Germany got a new government when we look at climate and energy policy as you see it?
It's a very good choice to have these two subjects because I think they are really intensely interlinked. Mm-hmm. If you can say that the first one, the energy issue, is a free choice of priority by the government. It is among the first priorities the new government put for itself when it came to power in the end of last year.
So it was not something that happened because of the war in Ukraine. It was a priority from the beginning.
It was a priority from the beginning, mm-hmm. The priority of what is called here the grüne Umstellung, mm-hmm. the green transition, because of, as you know, as you have said, there are three parties, and including the Green, and of course, the green transition is one of the main priorities. Mm-hmm. So from the beginning on, to try to make Germany CO2 free until 2050, or not to try, but the project of doing so was the main priority of this government. And it has been helped in a way, but we come to that later on, through the fact that with the mm-hmm. war imposed by Putin and the necessity of getting independent from Russian energy.
Yes,
so we
because
have the concurrent trends here.
Yes, because until now, I mean, that has been a conflict or a political issue for many years now, the fact that Germany was a leading force in creating the Nord Stream pipeline that was built exactly to make it easier to get Russian gas, I suppose, primarily from Russia and into Europe. And also, as we know, Germany took some years ago a decision about ending nuclear power. What is the new government's position there? Was there a change in terms of the opinion on nuclear power, and was the Nord Stream decision changed already before the Ukraine war?
So on nuclear power, there's no change of position. It has been examined whether it would be a possibility to prolong these plants, but it has been shown that this is not a realistic possibility because they are running out of fuel. So in order to, and all the things have been planned for them to be closed down at the end of the year. So that's a thing that will remain. Mm-hmm. Concerning Nord Stream 2 and Nord Stream 1 before, it's true that this was an approach chosen by the previous and several previous governments to rely on gas, because there has been the conviction that Russia would be a reliable supplier, but then the political situation turned out as it is, and the German finance minister, Mr. Christian Lindner, he has coined the phrase of the renewable energies being freedom energies. Mm-hmm. And I think that is very true, because they end the dependency on fossil fuels as fossil fuels, but they also end the dependency on Russian energy altogether. And therefore, as I said before, these are two concurrent.
These two are linked. Before we go into the Russia and Ukraine discussion, let's just remind ourselves that actually the new chancellor, Olaf Scholz, has actually been to Denmark. And his first visit to Denmark was not to Copenhagen, as it would probably be traditionally. Instead, he went to Esbjerg. And why was that?
Yes, because Esbjerg is definitely the energy hub already today for wind energy in the North Sea. And it's even developing this aspect. And there has been the summit organized by the state minister, Mette Frederiksen. She invited the chancellor, but also the heads of government from Belgium and the Netherlands, as mm-hmm. well as the president of the European Commission, Mrs. von der Leyen. And they officialized one of the biggest energy projects, I think even in the world, at least for Denmark, by far the biggest, which is to 10 times the wind energy production in the North Sea. So in 2050, the energy produced there would be sufficient to supply all private households in the whole European Union, not in Germany or Denmark, but in the whole European Union. So this is a fantastic project. Mm-hmm. And until 2030, there is an intermediate goal that is to make it four times bigger than it is now. So four times until 2030, 10 times until 2050.
So this sounds like a very big business opportunity for Danish renewable energy sector, and also as a project that potentially could strengthen the links between Denmark and Germany and the rest of the EU considerably over the coming years?
Yes, it definitely is. Even so, you have to see that it will profoundly change the whole setting of the industrialization in the area, because industry always follows energy. We've seen that in Germany, in the Ruhr region. It's not the reason why the Ruhr region has been the industrial heart of Germany in the 19th and 20th century is that coal was the energy of that century.
Right.
And coal is in Ruhr.
So now, the industry places itself where they have access to energy.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And now the energy, the primary energy of the 21st century will be electric energy, wind or solar, but both, but here wind energy. And I think the industry will develop there where there is the energy, and that's definitely the North Sea basin with Denmark, with Germany, with the Netherlands, and with Belgium. And that's mm-hmm. the reason why the Prime Minister, Mette Frederiksen, invited these four countries.
So we have a German government that from the outset was very focused on putting more emphasis on renewable energy, getting away from fossil fuels also for climate reasons. We have an energy minister who is also the vice chancellor, who is actually also has very strong links to Denmark, Robert Habeck. What role does he play in the government?
Yes, he is the vice chancellor, so the deputy of the chancellor, and he is the economic minister, includes the energy ministry. It's the same ministry. So he is really in a key position, especially as concerns the construction of renewable energy sources.
And he's from the Green Party.
And he's indeed very attached to Denmark. In fact, he privately is often in Copenhagen. Recently has been in Louisiana, just on a very private thing, to give a little conference there. And he has studied in Denmark, to my knowledge. And his
Roskilde, if I'm not mistaken.
So, yeah. And his children are also studying and living at least partly in Denmark.
So a lot of Danish influence in German politics. We have Robert Habeck, who is a Danish speaker, and we also, for the first time, have a representative for the Danish minority in Sydslesvig, represented in the Bundestag, in the German parliament in Berlin.
Yes, indeed. And yesterday I had the chance here on the Folkemøde to have a conversation with him. So indeed.
He's at the Folkemøde.
Yes,
well.
He's at the Folkemøde. We gave together a conference yesterday together with Pia Olsen-Dyr on the relations in the Sonderjylland and North German part. Not only that, but in the local parliament in Schleswig-Holstein, where there had been elections as well recently, there are now four members of this party, of the Südschleswigsche Wählerverband, and that is a full political group. Mm-hmm. So for the first time in history, they have a full political group. So the Danish, the German-Danish cooperation is really strengthened at the moment.
And now let's turn to the last subject, which is probably in some ways the biggest and most complex and most important one, which is of course the war in Ukraine and the relation between Russia and the rest of Europe. The invasion in Ukraine led to some very dramatic and big changes in German foreign policy. What actually happened after Russia invaded Ukraine in February?
Yes, the invasion by Russia was really a fundamental shift in international relations, a shift that by many had been unthinkable before, because we were accustomed to the fact that all international relations were rules-based and according to legal rules. Whereas Russia returned deliberately to a very old form of politics, power politics, that was characteristic for the 19th and 20th century, and we had hoped that it was for the past forever, but it returned. So we had to react to that, and the Chancellor reacted very quickly and very decisively. So the invasion was, as you know, on the 24th of February, and on the 27th of February, which is 3 days later, and which was a Sunday, there was a special meeting of the Bundestag called together, and there the Chancellor held his Zeitenwende Rede, so time change speech, where he put away fundamental principles of German foreign and security policy of the last 70 years, namely the fact that you should never, that Germany would never deliver arms to a war region. And it was, for instance, decided to provide Ukraine with arms. It was decided to, whereas for decades it was always scaling down the military, Abrüstung. Now there has been established a fund of 100 billion euro, 100 billion euro. That must be 740 billion kroner.
Yeah. And 250 milliarder to translate the figure into Danish. That is a very large number.
Yes. Even the constitution has been changed for that. Mm-hmm. So this shows how profound this change is in history. And
And still there is a lot of criticism that Germany is not active enough in helping Ukraine and in engaging in the conflict in Ukraine. Why is it so difficult for Germany, and why is this such a big change?
Yes, it is a very fundamental change, because it's a profound change of mind. So the whole mindset of German foreign and security policy has to be changed. That has to do with what I said earlier, the fact that we are now returning, at least in the relations to Russia, to power politics, a mindset that Germany did not have at all, because the German mindset on foreign and security policy was defined by the fact that Germany had been the aggressor in the Second World War. It is really this role, this very bad role that has been deeply internalized, and all foreign and security policy of the last 70, 80 years was to make sure that never again Germany would be an aggressor, and never again war would come out of German soil. And this is very good, of course. I mean, that's a very important goal. But what hasn't been realized then was that the aggressor can be someone else, that the aggression can come from the outside, and that in such a case we need to defend ourselves, we need to defend our allies, and we need also to help possibly other countries that are attacked, like Ukraine at the moment. And for this you need military means. But this is such a profound change that it does not come overnight, and it needs...
It's not just one speech in the Bundestag and then it's all changed?
Definitely not. I mean, you need a profound change in the mindsets of many politicians, many political deciders, and this takes some time. Yeah,
I think it was a former foreign minister in Poland, Sikorski, who famously said that for 75 years or so we've been afraid of a strong Germany. Now we need to be afraid of not having a strong Germany. Is Germany capable of becoming a strong nation again, so to speak? Of course, in many ways Germany is a very strong nation, but also a strong power that uses its power.
Well, on the material side, indeed, after when these changes will be implemented, Germany will have the biggest military expenditure in the whole of Europe. That's true, but I think Germany will always be very anchored in this fact: never again war coming from German soil. So this remains our national identity, our DNA, our political DNA. It's not the fact that we are now investing into military means does not mean that we are getting rid of that. And I think Germany will always be very aware of its responsibility because of the historical reasons not to conduct an aggressive policy. That's the fundamental difference between the Russian policy and the German and also European policy altogether, that we are defending ourselves against an aggression. And we as Europeans, as Germans, would never aggress someone. Whereas, unfortunately, we have to deal with an aggression that comes from the outside.
And then finally, just in these days, as we're meeting here at the Folkemøde, something very important is happening in the European Union, because there's a lot of discussion about declaring Ukraine a candidate country for the European Union, which of course means that there will still be a long, long process of many years before they actually eventually could become a member of the EU. But could you finally try to look a bit into the future with me and say, how do you think Germany will handle this process of connecting not just Ukraine but more potential candidate countries, linking them closer to the European Union after what we have seen over this last half year?
Yes, this is a very important process. The Commission has proposed that Ukraine becomes a candidate country, and Germany, as well as other countries as well, France, Italy, they had been together in Kiev, but also other countries are supporting this. I think this is a very important decision to be taken as soon as possible, and probably at the next European Council, which will be next week. The reason why it is so important is to give Ukraine a clear European perspective, to make clear that it is for the Ukrainians to decide for themselves what will be their political future, and also give them the possibility to decide that, and so that they are not obliged to be under Russian rule. Of course, this is a long and complicated process, because in fact you have to change profoundly the whole a whole country. I mean, everything in that country, the smallest rules they have in their legal system must be EU compatible. And this is a tremendous task. It needs a lot of effort, political effort, but also very technical effort, enlargement negotiations. You have to go through all the key to all the rules of the European Union and see what can be done. And of course, Germany and all other European Union members will help now Ukraine to do that process, will help, of course, financially, but will also help by counseling them so that they can make this huge transformation and become a prosperous and free and democratic member of the European Union in the future.
And then, as a very final question, let me just maybe put the most difficult one to you, because now we've talked about the changed energy policy, climate policy of the new government. We've talked about Ukraine and the need to change our perception of Russia. And a lot of the German industry, which of course is driving the German economy, is actually dependent on Russian gas to function. How far is Germany ready to go in order to put pressure on Russia? Is it ready to actually cut off gas, even if it means a big energy crisis for German industry with all the economic implications that would have?
Of course, now we have to be ready because it doesn't depend necessarily on us alone. I mean, it's also the other side that can
they
cut
could also
the gas.
Cut the gas.
And in fact, they are already playing with that, making political maneuvers at the moment to reduce the gas amount. And obviously, they can play with that and probably will do so. Mm-hmm. So in any case, we have to be ready independently of whether we decide it to do it or whether the other side decides it. Of course, we need other supplies of gas. We are working on that. There has been a energy partnership with Qatar. There has the U.S. is helping us very much with gas, and we are building LNG terminals in Germany too, and provisionally we have ships. So yes, we are working on that, and the strategic issue is the renewable energy again, and there we come back to what we said in the first place. That renewable energy is freedom energy.
Freedom energy. Let's end on that note. A government working for freedom energy. Pascal Hector, thank you very much for coming by, and enjoy the rest of Folkemødet.
Thank you, and very much. Thank you very much also for the opportunity to be here at Folkemødet. Folkemødet is such an amazing place, and I'm so happy to have the chance to live here, this democracy in real life that is taking place here.
Great. Thank you very much.
Tak fordi du lyttede med til det her live interview fra Altingets podcaststudie på Folkemødet i Allinge. Du kan finde mange flere interviews i Azures podcast feed. Og hvis du har lyttet til alle vores Azure-afsnit, så kan jeg også anbefale to af vores andre politiske podcasts, nemlig DK Pol og Altinget EU. Dem finder du der, hvor du ellers finder dine podcasts. Jeg hedder Caroline Tranberg, og rigtig god sommer, til vi lyttes ved igen.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.